Good evening. It is 7:11. We are reconvening the open session of tonight's meeting. And I want to let board members know this is being recorded in Google Meets. So when you speak, please turn on your Google Meets microphone, but then remember to shut it off. Otherwise, we'll have a lot of feedback. So sorry about the clunkiness of it, but we can handle this. And we are on action discussion items. The only item we have on the agenda tonight is the report. We have we've got Missy Beavers, Executive Director of Pupil Services, with Eric Weir, Director of Special Education and Student Services. The purpose of this is building a stronger special education system using external evaluation to strengthen systems and student outcomes. Ms. Beavers?
Good evening. We're here tonight to talk about an extension of the continuous improvement work that we have been doing within the Pupil Services Department, specifically in regards to an outside evaluation that we did to look at the systems work we have been doing. I'm here with Eric Weir, too. I just want to introduce him. So the first thing we wanted to discuss was why we initiated an outside program evaluation. We really were focusing on elementary education because that's where we were hearing the most noise and seeing the most disruption in the system. We've been doing continuous improvement work with DPI and CESA. We have a digital systems team. We've been doing that for the last 5 years. In hopes of, or looked at. You'll see on the left-hand side, leadership, service delivery, instruction, the role of the program manager, collaboration, professional learning, and staffing. Specifically, there was a thorough data review. There were caseload studies, and what I mean by that is how many students assigned to caseloads, also looking at the minutes. So is the workload comparable to the caseload? They specifically did IEP reviews, random IEP reviews. They looked at our special ed resources, and they did individual interviews with program managers.
Any board member questions?
I've got a question about the what CISA evaluated. Who decided what needed to be evaluated? Is this just something standard? Oops.
Sorry, who decided what needed to be evaluated? Is this something like you say, okay, CISA or whomever, we want a review of our department. Do they have a standard? Okay, we're going to come in and look at this, and you've given this slide with the multiple things. Do they do this for all of their evaluations, or did you handpick these?
We specifically requested these areas.
Okay, cool. And when they talk to staff, did they talk to just special ed staff or to all staff?
They talk to all staff.
Okay.
Including administrators.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you. This next slide is specific findings for these areas, these seven areas that I just spoke of in the slide previous. So these, when we got the report back, we took it to our team and we went through an exercise called What, So What, Now What. So everyone read through the report twice, and it took us 2 or 3 days to meet meeting dates, not full days, but. We looked through, and the first activity was what's standing out to you, what resonates with you, and we put those all on post-it notes and put it on, you know, one piece of paper, and then we talked about what kind of themes we were seeing there. Then we went to the next phase of the activity, and we did so what, and really when you do the so what, you're looking at the root causes. What do you think is the cause of these themes? And then the last activity was now what, and that's how we developed our action steps. So the findings on this page were really an outcome of those that activity that we did with our team. So the common themes, again, this includes pieces that are not related to the focus groups. This is just the review of the data that I said in the previous slide. The common themes were to strengthen consistency, clarify roles and systems, build educator capacity, increase collaboration, and improve instructional systems. For strength and consistency, I'll just read it out loud for people who are going to watch this at home. So more consistent implementation of special education practices across schools. Last year, we had 10 schools. We were getting feedback that the systems in place at schools were not consistent. So that was a very common theme. Clarify roles and systems, clearer expectations, decision-making structure needs to be clarified, and support for staff, both regular ed and special ed. Building educator capacity, there was a request for ongoing coaching and professional learning for both special and general education staff. Increased collaboration, there was a request for stronger partnerships between special education, general education, and school leadership. There's a gap there, and then improving instructional systems, so better alignment between IEPs, instruction, interventions, and progress monitoring.
Any questions?
Thank you. This next slide is speaking specifically to the common themes from the focus groups that we held. These groups were, each school had a day or at least a half a day to have focus groups. Staff were assigned by their principals. It was asked to assign special education staff, related service providers, student services staff, and regular ed staff as well as administrators. The majority of principals assigned their grade level PLCs. So the interviewer met with the fifth grade team, the interviewer met with the fourth grade team, there was a student services, and we did not participate in that, so staff could speak freely. The common themes from staff were clear expectations, more collaboration, better onboarding, more coaching, and consistent systems. And you'll see there's crossover, which we would expect and we would hope for, so that we can focus on the findings from both pieces of the report.
Any questions?
All right. So this next section then kind of just expands upon some of those themes that Missy just went over, and really taking what's in there specifically in the focus groups and working to look beyond just the perceptions of what individual staff may have going on in their building, stemming specifically from perceptions that maybe students aren't always getting what they need as often as they're needing to get it. And when we take a look at the data by individual buildings, we can see that students with disabilities have demonstrated growth equal to or greater than their peers in 8 out of 10 of our schools last year. Students with disabilities outperformed their peers in both English and mathematics growth at multiple schools. Students are making meaningful progress even while many continue working toward grade level proficiency. And growth data and program evaluation findings are both important. Together, they help to guide our improvement efforts.
Carol?
We kind of had discussions about that last week. I'm not sure that that's conclusive data. It's minimal, it's old, it goes back to things that are a year old, it's the growth data that's a 3-year average. I totally believe that you need to look beyond perceptions, and I totally believe that student growth data tells a story, but I don't think this is doing it for you. And you need to have better data and better ways to determine what the data is. We need to go back to district data and look at what our kids are actually doing. You should have access to a lot of district data. And I think that needs to be studied and researched thoroughly, because I don't think this tells a good picture.
We do use district data. I mean, you pay attention to that.
You're not reporting it to this.
Well, because the way we evaluate it is on growth and proficiency data.
You can get growth and proficiency data from district data, and you should, because, and like I said, this is from the district report card. The state goes through all kinds of crazy machinations to come up with that. It's a 3-year average. Some of those years would have included the information that was before we reconfigured. So I think you need better data to look beyond your perceptions. I totally agree that that's important. I totally believe you need to be looking at growth data. I think you need to look at internal district data if you're going to be doing this.
Tia.
Go ahead. Lauren?
I'm on because Missy's microphone is not on, so the audio, they can't hear Missy.
All right.
That's why I logged in.
Any other board member questions? Tom?
I'm just wondering that the use. I see the comparison to the regular ed growth, and I don't, just as a layman, not educator, you're comparing regular ed to special ed growth. I can't understand that, because I know they're apples and oranges. I had my son in special ed through the whole way, and he had a completely different system. I think it's unfair. Just me. Maybe you can explain why you would put this in there, that it's progressing better than regular ed growth. I mean, I don't understand that. I think they're two different sections of students, different learning maybe the same thing, but at a slower pace. So I don't think it's fair to even put that in there.
It is, it's based off of the same assessment. That's why we include it. So students without disabilities and students with disabilities are taking the same standardized assessment. So that's why we do that. They're not though, they're the same test. Forward exam, if you're a student with a disability.
Yeah. With accommodations, and also the state does special things for special ed students with specialized testing that could be included in there. Yeah. There was an alternative testing that is counted in there.
Less than 1% of the student population is allowed to take the alternative test.
Okay, I still tell you that that is
not a good,
I don't believe that that's a good measure. And I think you can find other measures that would give us better data about what our kids are doing currently, not a year or more ago or 3 years ago, because it's averaged. It's a 3 year average to get that score, as well as lots of other mechanisms that they go through to figure that out. So I think you can come up with much better data.
Any questions? Thank you, Ms. Berger. Go ahead.
Based on some of the comments, I don't know how much time I want to spend on this slide, but I included it. In case anyone was just curious on the difference really between growth versus proficiency and how people try to understand what we're looking at, we are leveraging growth scores. We, of course, are looking at proficiency data, we're looking at all sorts of types of data. The growth really helps inform how our students are out in their educational journey versus proficiency, which is just kind of more where they ended up. So we may know that a student has experienced a significant amount of growth for themselves personally on what they're working towards, that still may not equate to a proficiency mark on the standardized assessments. But both of those are important to growth, just as showing the progress that's occurring over time.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr.
So from all of that, then synthesizing what was in the reports, looking at the data, we came up and identified some of the primary strategic priorities for the first phase of our work. And that is to work to strengthen instructional consistency, bring clarity to goals, increase capacity, improve collaboration, is standardized systems. Again, this is phase one. We have to start somewhere. And so these are the ones that have the most common things.
So a question I have on the next slide, we have themes, and it looks like these themes align with these priorities, titled slightly different from them. Okay, any other board members have questions on their identified strategic priorities? Thank you. Go ahead.
So this item takes those themes and works to articulate the actions that we have started to expand on. Like Missy mentioned, you know, we had the results of our evaluation at the beginning of May. So like another month left with our team for summer. And so this is where we're at with the time that we've had. We had actually a meeting with members of our team on Friday. We met with other members of our team today, so we do have ongoing work during the summer. The things we've already talked about and are working towards building our passion steps around in terms of strengthening consistencies. We're going to program managers in the past that have always been science specific buildings. We're not going to necessarily assign them to a school. We have many more schools than we have the ability to have program managers. And one of the things that came out of that is how can we better use them? So, thinking about how we can leverage them as a collective team to provide more comprehensive support to all of our schools instead of an expectation being on one person for one or two sites. Reviewing and updating just education resources. We have tools that we provide staff with IEPs, different guides and documents. So going back and making sure that those are updated, any of the areas where maybe said they were kind of confused or not that some clarity to come from, ensure that we bring clarity to those documents so that they are as user-friendly as possible and are meeting the staff needs, right? That's the biggest thing here. Things we had worked, but at this point in time, we're maybe not working curious. So how can we enhance them because they're only useful if people find them useful. For clarifying rules and systems, again, we're talking about redefining program manager, annual evaluation around state, federal, and district expectations for professional learning, making sure that we're doing very targeted and explicit professional learning for special education and general education staff around topics within special education and student services. For building educator capacity, it's really leveraging and kind of shifting program managers, hopefully so that they can be viewed more as coaches and consultants to the staff instead of somebody that they're more compliant, which is possibly how they were perceived to have been in the past. Enhance our special education specific professional learning, like I mentioned, increase professional learning opportunities for all staff related to special ed and to lift up teacher leaders. Increase collaboration. Regular collaboration times for coaches, for managers, school sites, LSS, and interventions, and making it an expectation across the district that we have mandatory special education team meetings so that all elementary special ed staff can get updates and learning and collaborate with each other. All of our middle school staff can, instead of a pocket of staff here, a pocket of staff there, to try to bring that consistency and make sure that it's not one people think they're hearing this and another group of people over here thinking they're hearing something else. And then the improved instructional systems come back to professional learning around specially designed instruction. So what is specially designed instruction and really what can they be using? I know the district is fortunate to have quite a few resources, curricular resources that our educators have access to. It's clear to us now that our job is to help them better see how they can leverage those tools that they have to meet the students' needs instead of thinking they need something extra in addition to what they already have access to. Coaching and programming support to meet student needs aligned to their IEP, and making sure that when we're building the IEP that it is individualized and that the specially designed instruction is individualized and that we're not catching ourselves just assigning a number of minutes because that's what a master schedule in a school seems to allow. And know that you may have an intervention block that runs for 40 minutes every day, but if a student doesn't need 40 minutes every day, we don't have to use 40 minutes for that student. And if a student needs more than 40 minutes, then we need to come together and figure out where are other times that we can provide some additional support for that student.
Any board member questions? These
are pretty general. And I don't, what does strength and consistency mean? There's no definitions of some of these things. These are pretty broad, and I don't see we asked all of our other teams to do SMART goals, and where, there's no detail in terms of what should this look like.
Any other questions or comments? I've got a couple of questions, Mr. Weir. So it
says phase one, how many phases are you anticipating and how long is a phase?
There is a minimum would be a year. So going off of progress of this continuous improvement in systems work, the change takes anywhere from 3 to 5 years.
Okay.
But again, this is just one piece of data that we have that we're leveraging now and the last thing we saw about our continuous improvement efforts as a district. Like, that's the plan we're working on here, and this is just a set. really not that much broader. So it's not that, you know, we're starting on year one and we expect 3 years before we see any sort of change. If you are in something in place, you have a broader continuous improvement. And we just noticed through that request that things weren't as successful as we had hoped at the elementary level specifically, which brought us this.
Okay. So will we receive some information about more details, specifics, and like when you'll be reporting back to either the superintendent or the board or the TLE Pupil Services Committee so that we know what to expect moving forward?
Yeah, regarding continuous improvement, I brought it one for sure every year, a couple of years, two times a year to the board, and this is that. We have the findings within May, so we really just started to scratch the surface with the summer committee around building this up. So this is the beginning focus. We know we have some more details around our plan, and that we're going to continue.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
This next slide then just tries to bring a visual to clarifying that continuum of services, which is an obligation as part of IDEA. Within the feedback that we got from this report, right, there is recommendation on strengthening that continuum of services, not just adopting one particular model. And so really making sure that we work with our teams to remember that as they have meetings, IEP meetings with students and families, that they're basing their decisions truly off of what that student needs in order to be successful. We've identified the need to do some training for all of our staff around what is least restrictive environment and what does that mean. Looking at staff capacity, and then what are strong instructional supports when we're talking about that specially designed instruction. And so the visual just gives you kind of an idea of what some of the most intensive, so on the left side are the most intensive types of services that a district could look at providing for a student with an IEP, and the far right side, the light threw me off there. I got that mixed up. The left side is the most inclusive, and the right side is the most restrictive or the most specialized. So it goes everywhere from being fully included with non-disabled peers, with maybe just a few supplementary aids and services, to having more maybe accommodations and modifications in the general ed environment, to then maybe having an extra adult present with them in general ed environment, to then moving along the continuum more restricted to not as much time with general, their non-disabled peers in gen ed, more time with just special education, all the way through exploring alternate placements for the most severe or to extreme cases.
Any board member questions?
So you mentioned the more inclusive, like in the general ed setting, students receive, thank you. Can you give us an example of what that is, and are do we have that in every general ed classroom where there are special ed students?
Yes. So, I mean, I guess I can't say for certain that every section in every building has a student with an IEP in it, but there definitely are sections of all the grades across the district that have students with IEPs. When we talk about supplementary aids and services, those are typically strategies or things that that student needs to just help them be successful in that environment. So it could be that they're able to have a text read to them so they can put some headphones on. They'll have the auditory text while the other students are expected to silently be reading a book. It could be if a calculator, like maybe a teacher is working on basic math facts, and typically a calculator is not in, allowed during that time for mastery, accommodation could be made that a student with an IEP, if that is appropriate, can use a calculator to help them navigate those math problems. We see fidgets and use of sensory toys as supplementary aids and services. We have a lot of alternate seating in our district. Teachers, you may have seen them when you go into classrooms, they put elastic bands on like the bases of the chair so that kids can kind of bounce their feet against the bottom of their chair and give some of that movement. We have pedal, like stationary bike seating. We have wobble stools, we have cube chair, we have all sorts of things. And those would all be examples of like supplementary aids and services that a student may need to just help keep them regulated and grounded in the general ed environment.
I just want to add to that is each student has their own list of supplementary aids and services. So when you ask, does every classroom have it, depending on what a student needs, we would provide that to ensure that it's in place in the classroom.
Okay, I guess maybe a better question would be, are the general ed classroom teachers all aware of what these supplemental aids or services are, and are they instructed on how to implement them and provide them to the students?
In theory, yes. So all of the special ed staff provide IEP at a glance, is what it's called, to all staff that that student interacts with. And that really pulls the student's goals that they're working on, and then it pulls all of their supplementary aids and services and the specially designed instruction that they get. So it's kind of like a snapshot of the really important things without all the filler narrative that goes into a pretty comprehensive IEP. And so those are provided to all staff at the beginning of the school year or after an annual or review revise occurs and they make any changes to those. I think through some of the data that we've seen when we talk about needing to provide some professional learning, the question that you ask about, do they all understand? That's a piece that is apparent that we need to provide more learning opportunities to our general ed staff around what does this mean, what does this look like, where are those resources located, who can they go to, those kinds of things.
Thank you. Mr. Hinkins?
Yes, Eric or Missy, do you allocate how many special ed kids are in a classroom? I mean, if a general ed, you know, mainstreaming with them with the mainstream, do you specify how many are in a classroom?
We don't directly. That's typically done at the building level of scheduling.
Okay.
However, in our world, we talk a lot about the rule of natural proportions,
right,
which means that any educational environment should not exceed what the typical percentages are for our students. So if a building has 15% students with IEPs, a classroom shouldn't exceed more than 15%.
Okay.
That would be a best practice.
I get it.
But it doesn't always work that way, especially in our one section schools, unfortunately. Because there's no other teacher to be able to see.
So the building principal decides where those IEPs students go. Those
work with special ed teachers.
Correct.
To get input, program managers had input on those.
And a little off topic, IEP teams. I mean, I'm familiar with it from when my son was there. I know that they're troublesome to get everyone together and the parent there together and the student. How do you draw? I mean, who's on an IEP team? It's usually the
or it's required members.
Yeah.
Have an LEA, which is somebody who's going to represent the district and can allocate resources.
Okay.
You have to have a special education teacher, and you have to have a regular education teacher. The regular education teacher has the knowledge of that student.
Okay.
And then, of course, the parents and the student are invited.
Right.
And then related service providers, so that would be your occupational therapist, your physical therapist, your deaf hearing teacher, speech therapist,
right,
required. And then you can certainly invite more.
So if you have an IEP meeting and the parent and the student that nobody chose, you can still have the IEP meeting and modify it? No?
No.
Not
time.
Okay.
You have to map in those minimum required numbers unless you have signed consent to excuse somebody from the team. And you can do that, but it should be prior signed consent.
Okay, thank you. I know it's a big chore.
And I would just add, specifically too, if a parent doesn't show up, we have to be able to document three what they consider good faith attempts to engage the family in coming to an IEP meeting and participating before it would be okay in the state's eyes to move forward with an IEP meeting without a parent present.
So good faith means like, if I call your phone and I get your voicemail, but it just says, this is 608, well, that would not be considered good faith because it's not voice identifying that it's yours. A written notice, usually a written notice, phone call, and perhaps an email or another, you know, a home visit or something like that.
And you normally do two a year?
You're required by law to have one meeting annually per year.
But our students have many. Lots of review requests.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Anyone else? Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson?
Is it a parent or any guardian that would be there?
The parent or legal guardian.
Sorry, a parent.
Yep. I mean, we do have some cases where a parent is like, I really can't, I'm gonna send my parent or the child grandparent. And if that's what they're choosing to do, we've typically allowed that to go forward. I'm just thinking of like the times that I've been involved in those meetings too, we always then circle back around though with the actual parent to make sure that they fully are comfortable with whatever, you know, everything that was talked about in the meeting.
Thank you.
Yep. Okay. So this year is we started to then try to map out if we were going to start to measure success and the impact on some of the changes in work that we're trying that we're going to put forward here, what would some of that look like. So when we talk about stronger instructional system, right, we're going to look for greater consistency across schools. So the feedback that we get is inconsistent, specifically from our staff that support multiple buildings. You know, they'll come to me and say, I was at this meeting and I was told that I needed to do this, but now today I'm at this building and we had a meeting, but I was told I needed to do it this way. Eric, how am I supposed to actually do it? And so to eliminate the number of staff that come and just say, like, I'm getting mixed messages. For increased staff capacity, right? Having higher staff confidence and retention, improved collaboration, more effective problem solving and shared ownership of students. So leveraging our professional learning communities, really supporting our gen ed and special ed staff and related service providers to have that time to come together, to talk about the students, to problem solve, to engage in work around advancing the outcomes for the students. And then that improves student outcomes, just continuing to look at student growth, looking at our data, making sure that we are seeing that needle moving and that we don't slide backwards or are in a standstill. And one of the things we've talked about in terms of the top portion, since a lot of the feedback that has been kind of pulled together in this report was through focus group and direct staff feedback, a real solid way of us working to kind of gather whether or not staff's perceptions from what they gave when we originally engaged in this evaluation to how things are now that we've made some changes would be to come back around mid-year and ask the same questions and see if the responses have changed from when they initially gave them this last school year to this mid-year, and then again at the end of the school year, so that we would have kind of two pulse checks on the staff perception on these areas and us being able to see, are things getting better in their eyes? Do they feel more supported? Do they feel less confused? Those types of things.
Any board member questions? Yeah. Yeah, I will take you back to this, the SMART goals and the definitions. Those aren't really clear and those are not really measurable things, the way you've set it up. Yeah, you could probably do some staff surveys, or some going back, but I think you need to have more specific goals that can that have better accountability metrics, that you really need to work on those measurements and how we can measure what's going on.
I'm looking forward to it almost feels like there's a column missing from we'll look for
we'll look for and then it jumps to evidence of success, and I'm looking for that meet in what that middle column. We look for specifically what we're looking for, what our targets are. I'm looking forward to you guys have that all fleshed out.
Anyone else?
Excuse me. This last slide, during a meeting, I was asked what can the board do to support the work that we'll be moving forward as a result of the program evaluation. And we came up with four things. And the first one is to support a long-term commitment to continuous improvement. Like Eric said, this work takes time to see improvements. We've been doing continuous improvement work for 5 years, and it was probably 2 years ago that we started seeing things actually change. There's adaptive change and technical change, and some things we can do right away, but some things we're going to take time to see movement on. So we're requesting support in that. Supporting investments in staff development and retention. Monitoring progress through measurable outcomes rather than individual anecdotes, and recognizing that meaningful systems change occurs over time. So that's what we're asking in response to the question, how can the board support? And in closing, we just, we're kind of grounded in that our systems are going to improve by learning from this evaluation that we requested. That's kind of where we're at with that. So we'll take any questions you have.
Thank you, Ms. Beavers and Mr. Weir, for putting this presentation together. Are there more questions from board members? Mr. Schuf.
Thank you. Lots of buttons to press. Take my hand down, turn on the room mic, turn on the Google Meet mic. Missy and Eric, thank you so much for this. I really like the answers to the questions because I'm learning a lot. When you presented the other day at the TLD committee that I sat in on, I learned a lot there as well. So that would be my comment, is that I'm looking forward to learning more throughout the year. Really applaud you for seeking a program evaluation. I just came from 15 years at Bullitt College, where those external evaluations are the way that departments get better. And so I got to learn that process. So I'm really excited about learning how this process helps you. So thank you for requesting it. And thank you for already getting forward and getting into it and working on it. And we'll all as a board look forward to hearing progress as it comes out of this and all the other work you're doing. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Fox.
I'm sure you know that I want to see a much more specific action plan. We need to see a written plan that has specific goals, implementation strategies, and accountability metrics. When you write a really good IEP, you look for evidence, you look for strategies, you progress monitor, and you evaluate, right? This is very, and I get that you've been just beginning to build this out, but you need to build it out a little further. It's not enough. I think that the superintendent needs to make sure that there's a comprehensive action plan that's written, and that it has all these accountability measures in it. It covers things like leadership, staff capacity, instruction and services, all of those areas that you had on your special ed thing. I think there needs to be a plan for all of those. It also, like I said, with the IEP, it goes back to the idea of SMART goals. You have to have really good goals. You have to have strategies. You have to know who's going to do it. You have to have timelines. You have to have evaluation. You have to have all of those things. And I would like to see a written action plan fairly soon, like in the next couple of months, and then we can evaluate it on a regular basis throughout the year.
Any other board members? Dr. Gordon, did you want to add anything?
Sure, just unclicking my button. So I was taking notes on that. I think a plan is a good idea. I do believe that the pupil services, special ed, and curriculum and instruction team can work together to collaborate that plan. As you know, the district has been working collaboratively with partnership from our state represent our people, our ESSA plan, and working on that to create our SIP plans for our buildings. And that is a 3-year plan that we have rolled out, and we are working with our buildings to work on and roll out as well. Of course, it's still, we're still in that phase of working on that plan. This falls in line nicely with that. As we're looking for an entire systems improvement, it does fall within that. We are capable of doing good things, and I know we will do good things. Again, this was a preliminary, a baseline for where we are. And so using the information that we have from this report to make systems and structures improvement is really important to, I know, Missy and Eric, and to the rest of us, and to our kids and families. So absolutely, we're up for the task, and we will make sure we are able to give full report.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Tom Hankins?
Yes, I really want to applaud, take my hat off to Eric and Missy for asking for this. I think it takes a big step to say, it wasn't a cry for help, but at least come back and like Missy said, look at us, help us improve. So I really want to lean into this evaluation, and I think it's a great tool for you to, and I know you're presenting these things, but I think it's a good thing. We all need to self-evaluate ourselves. It's hard to look in the mirror sometimes, but I think it was a wonderful outreach that you guys made, and I think we really have to embrace it and understand it, and we'll be a better district for it, a better team. So I'm really happy that you reached out to your partner in this evaluation and presented it this way. Thank you.
Thank you, Joanne Rue.
Thank you for bringing us all this information, and I applaud your courage in reaching out and asking for outside evaluation. We can choose to grow, and I think that's what your purpose was in this, and so I appreciate you doing that. My question is, in wanting to have specifics and having your SMART goals, is that something you plan on doing once the special ed teachers and your team is back in August? Is that part of the plan, and why we're not at specifics yet? And I think the population changes every year too, right?
So we will go back with Dr. Mott and the curriculum instruction team and have conversations. But the context of this evaluation was under that broader work within continuous improvement. And so really that work is guided by those goals. So the SMART goals that we have set, and we have 3 of them that are set on our district improvement plan, those would be the SMART goals. Those are rooted in student outcomes, which is what this is all focused on, right, is improving student outcomes. And so what detail can come for sure would be a more enhanced action plan, right? Just like we have more detailed action plans within that continuous improvement, that district plan for different areas. We've talked about in regards to ARC, Eureka Math, our SEL curriculums in the district, and how things are going with those tools. I think of the other ones. We have a whole list of them out there, right? Special ed specific would live within the context of that broader plan. So in my view, I would not be developing specific SMART goals to this material because the SMART goals live in our district plan. This is a subset of that, so there would be action steps.
Anyone else? Executive Director Beavers and Director Weir, thank you. We appreciate your time and effort in putting this together and coming out on such a hot night. And Dr. Gordon, my personal recommendation, and I know, as I mentioned, the curriculum and instruction department and pupil services department, but I encourage this is a district wide issue. So use resources in HR, use resources in business operations, use board members, use whatever you need to use, because although this is specific to students, it's going to make improvements throughout the district and for all of our students. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what the improvements. And if there are no further questions or comments, I will take a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion by Dan Shoof, seconded by Joanne Shoof. Any discussion? None, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Everyone have a good night.
Thank you.